This week on Creator Upload, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and other platforms are impenetrable, but can social NFTs bring them down? YouTube's toy spree may be over and Instagram gets more of a conscience.
Welcome to Creator Upload, your creator economy podcast. I am Lauren Schnipper.
And I'm Joshua Cohen. Lauren.
Yes.
How many JPEGs did you buy for how many thousands of dollars this week?
All of them.
All of them?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, that actually is not a terrible answer because you could have bought all of them because some of them are being fractionalized now.
Okay.
And Party DAO, which I'll explain in a second, created Party Bid, which now gives you an opportunity to, with your friends, play along in the amazing economy that is NFT and crypto to buy something collaboratively together.
Okay.
Are you not entertained?
I am entertained. I am intrigued. And I'm ready to move on.
Okay, no, hold on. We're going to stop here for a second because Fred Wilson, do you know who Fred Wilson is?
No, don't ask me questions and then people think I'm dumb.
Yeah, it's okay, Lauren. This is learning experience. We're learning in public. It's for everybody. Fred Wilson, one of the most famous VCs in the world. It's crazy if you have no idea who he is. In any case, he's at Union Square Ventures. And he has this great vlog, avc.com, literally avc.com.
Uh-huh.
His three-letter toplevel.com domain tells you how long he's been in the game for. He posted this 750 word or so blog post, maybe less, about crypto and NFTs, which I think if the word crypto and NFT make you bristle a little bit or kind of zone out, this will give you an entree into why you shouldn't do that in the future and maybe open your eyes to exactly what's happening now.
Okay.
So in summary, what Fred says is that he's always been looking for this opening in crypto. He's been an early investor in Coinbase, early advocate for Bitcoin. But back then, the only kind of utility for this crypto stuff was as a store of value. And he knew that that would be big, but not how this would get mainstream adoption. And so he wrote how this mainstream adoption of crypto, you can kind of see it opening up right now. And how is it opening up? To quote him, "I've always thought the opening would be at the intersection of gaming, online communities, and social networks. Why? Because those are the mainstream consumer experiences where geeks tend to be the first adopters. But it is hard to take on the existing gaming companies with a new architecture, also existing social media companies, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, etc. The user experience around new stuff always sucks, and who wants to play a game with a shitty UI? Why would someone with a million followers on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter leave those behind for a new social net?"
Mm-hmm.
So the existing incumbents are the defensive line. They look impenetrable until they aren't. That's when the opening emerges. The opening is emerging around NFT experiences. And that's what happened this week. Basically, there's this DAO, which is a decentralized autonomous organization. Anyone can kind of join a DAO, put money into a DAO, and then have voting powers and rights in that DAO according to whatever the institutional governing docs of that DAO is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put your name in. It's all on the blockchain, but it's all open to the public. But it's basically a bunch of Ethereum addresses that are contributing to this organization that then vote on what this organization does. And so Party DAO is this DAO that exists in that framework. They just launched this new thing called Party Bid, which basically deconstructs the DAO even more so that you can contribute resources, in this case, Ethereum,
mm-hmm.
for a specific goal. And the goal of this was to buy a CryptoPunk, one of the most valuable, earliest kind of NFT JPEGs that was started by Larva Labs in 2017. They're highly coveted now. If you have one, it's like posting a picture of a Lamborghini on Instagram, except kind of cooler because it's geeky. It's like showing you're cool, it's social proof, it's showing you know what's up, and that you're an early adopter or are hip to the scene or have a lot of dough or all the above. And so this Party Bid came together to buy one of these CryptoPunks for several million dollars. And 500 people contributed to this. And it was this whole kind of like social plus commercial experience that was fun for everyone involved.
Okay. I mean, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done now. I mean, it's super exciting. This is just...
It sounds like you're not. Okay, keep going.
This is just... I mean, like, this is just scratching the surface. And I imagine a lot of people are saying like, yeah, okay, cool. A bunch of people are getting together to buy a JPEG. Who cares? And yes, agreed. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I think there's going to be a ton of different types of communal experiences that are going to be created and evolve incredibly rapidly because of the framework which all this is built upon. It's inherent in it that there's this rapid productivity and growth and maybe like exponential opportunity and what the capabilities are in this. And so this is going to leak into the creator space soon. It's going to leak into everything soon. This is just a start.
I want to bring it back because one of the things that you said that I actually thought was very interesting and I'd not heard anybody frame it this way was about the platforms being like the defense. I thought that was really interesting because I, you know, my job right now is I talk to founders all the time of different startups. And so many of them, like their pitch is like, oh, the platforms, you know, you don't get all the information, you don't get to share to all of the people that follow you, you know, blah, blah, blah. They can change on a dime. All these things that are totally true. Their pitch is sort of like, we give you all the information, like we let you own it or whatever. And what I've started sort of saying to founders is like using, you know, one of Josh's favorite sort of saying is like, it's table stakes. At this point, it's table stakes for you to say, you get to own all of your data, you get to see all the email addresses, you get to reach all of your audience. Like that cannot be founders. That cannot be your pitch because everybody's saying that, right? What else? What is the product? And then it's going to be very difficult to compete with the products of these companies that are so established and have just infinite kind of resources. And so it's a tough sell because it's like, oh, everything should be going towards owned and operated and away from the platforms. And I don't even know that I disagree with that. It's just going to take a lot for me to sort of be bought into like, you're the one that I'm going to like place the bet on and do that with. So I think it's a really interesting concept and thinking about like if they're defense, how are you going to come at them? You better come at them really strong, you know?
Yeah. And it's not going to be some incremental change that's going to be able to penetrate that defensive line from all these platforms. I think it's going to be something orders of magnitude different, like a totally different structure or framework like crypto that's going to dethrone these people.
All right. We got to get to some topics here. All right. First up, Instagram, speaking of the platforms, is making some changes. It's going to put limits on DMs and comments for people you don't know. Basically, they're calling this limits, now available globally. Adam Mosseri posted this on his Instagram. It lets you hide comments and DMs from people who don't follow you or who only just followed you. Like, so they started following you yesterday and then they start giving you a barrage of really negative comments. I don't think it said like how long the threshold of like following that it has to be, but if they just started following, you can hide those comments. Basically, it's intended to prevent abuse, especially towards creators and public figures during spikes of unwanted interactions. One of the big pain points when I was there was that there's sort of a policy that if you're a public figure, all bets are off. Like people can say whatever they want about you and there's nothing that Instagram's really going to do. Very different than if you're a private individual and somebody's like hurling sort of like horrible things at you, comments, Instagram, Facebook would take much more action than they would if you're a public figure. I can remember actually a very specific incident. This is like sort of horrible, but when Robin Williams died and his daughter was posting and she was getting a lot of hate and there was nothing we could do because she's technically kind of a public figure. Although like, what's the definition of a public figure? There's a lot of different, you know, debates around that. So the fact that they're making this concerted effort, that's really something that's going to positively, hopefully impact public figures, I think is actually huge. This is like years in the making. I heard the impetus was the World Cup, Britain lost, and son of the black players, what did he do, the goal, he missed it and the whole thing. And he got a barrage of really kind of horrible racist comments towards him. And I mean, to the point where like Prince William was like, this is like huge public figures like that were like speaking out against it. Something else, it just said they're rolling out hidden words to everyone by the end of the month. When it's on, it basically automatically will filter DM requests with offensive words, phrases, and emojis so you don't have to see them. Thoughts on this, Josh?
I just wonder, like, Instagram was founded in 2010, Facebook acquired it in 2012. I just don't get why it takes this long for people to clean up their platforms.
Despite the fact that I just went on a whole rant about these platforms having infinite resources, the truth is they don't. And so you've got to have a lot of internal buy-in to get resources on it. And it's really crazy. Listen, when I got to that platform, nobody gave a shit about creators. Nobody cared. And there were little changes that would make a big difference to like the creator economy and this and that. By the time I left, these little changes were happening because it all of a sudden was this huge priority for the platform. These things were starting to get changed overnight. And I'm like, it was that easy? Like, you know, but if it's like, if you're being gold as an individual contributor against certain things that, you know, that are, you want them to be priorities for the company. And if this isn't a priority for the company, you're not going to work on it. And if you're not going to work on it, it's not going to happen, even if it could take you an hour or a day or whatever. It's infuriating, to be honest with you. It's infuriating that these things take so long. It seems like a very obvious thing that they could do. And here we are.
Yeah, and I think it's detrimental to growth early on to take resources away from whatever else you're doing to focus on all the terrible harassment that's going on your platform. I get it. I probably wish priorities were different, but that's the reality of what it is.
Yep.
What's a solve here? Is it like at these major platforms, once they reach a certain scale, they need to have a head of what?
The newer platforms are combating these things, I feel like, a lot earlier than like the Facebooks of the world, because they're like benefiting from, you know, seeing other platforms sort of mistakes. And like, I had an interview with a company after I left Facebook that was sort of a smaller rival platform that I won't mention because it was just a very bizarre interview. It was one of these that are sort of like the anti-Facebook ones, and they're, you know, they're all touting all the things that Zuckerberg's doing wrong. And I was like, you guys are not thinking about imposters. You guys are not thinking enough about hacking and security. It's like, you know, you have to think about these things from day one. I mean, you just have to. And like, I think Mark Zuckerberg admittedly believed the internet was a much more positive place than it ultimately was. And I think my experience being around him and hearing him speak was true. I don't think that he was ever intending to do any harm, but I think that like, there was just like, he just thought that this platform was bringing so much good to the world until like, there was a big wake up call in about like 2016, when it was like, this can be used for major harm. And I think that is when everything changed.
Yeah, maybe it's ahead of user health and safety. That sounds kind of lame. There could be a sexier title for it.
It's not like these people don't exist in the companies. It's just that, like, do they get the resources? And it's all white males like running these companies. And then they have the one head of diversity that's like, you know, giving speeches.
Right.
I mean, are you actually going to give them any power?
There has to be a value structure change or a different way to incentivize good behavior on the platform. I mean, Snapchat's taken this route. And they've been very public about it.
Yeah.
It's a closed ecosystem, so random people can't get in touch with random people. And that helps alleviate a lot of the problems with any type of harassment, although there is still harassment on Snapchat from people you know. They're not immune to it. I don't know what the answer here is. I think it's advertisers have to incentivize platforms to be better caretakers of their users. I mean, as a cisgender straight white male, I don't see a ton of this and I don't get a ton of this, but I see it a lot towards females I know on platforms especially. So if you're looking for it and you see all the people online, especially like on Twitter, complaining about this stuff, it's just amazing that they don't put more time, energy, and resources into really stopping it. And I don't know how those incentives are newly aligned.
I don't know, Josh. I don't know. Speaking of incentives, it's something that should have happened a long time ago. YouTube will now set under 18 users' uploads to private by default and bar overly commercial content from YouTube Kids. Now, there's a lot of reasons why this is significant, but James Besser, who's YouTube's Director of Product Management for Kids and Family, wrote this post, and he said, with private uploads, content can only be seen by the user and whomever else they choose. We want to help younger users make informed decisions about their online footprint and digital privacy, including encouraging them to make an intentional choice if they'd like to make their content public. I think that's really interesting. When it's called friction, right? When you're putting sort of like something in front of something that you have to make and then a choice. And so I would love to see what the data is after something like this happens, where how many people are making the choice to go more public than private. I think that you will see, you know, an uptick in just profiles being private. This is interesting. We'll also be adding an autoplay option on YouTube Kids and turning autoplay off by default on the app. Now, this is interesting because I don't know if you have Disney Plus and watch it with your kids, but as far as we can tell, there is no autoplay option on Disney Plus. I understand the positive of that because your kid just doesn't end up in like, you know, watching a stream of like a million videos without you kind of knowing what's going on. That said, there's so much content on Disney Plus that's like 4 minutes and my kid loves that. And it's like, it would be great if I could like string like 3 or 4 of those together, like these little 4-minute like Spider-Man episodes, just throwing it out there. There's like, I cannot find the autoplay option. Moving on.
The Disney Plus and YouTube Kids as a babysitter is a real thing. Don't judge us.
Don't judge us. Don't judge us. It is a real thing.
Every parent does us.
Pre-pandemic, I was much more strict about it. And that's all I can say about that. But this is the other very significant thing here, is that they're also going to be removing overly commercial content from YouTube Kids, such as videos that only focus on product packaging or directly encourages children to spend money, aka Ryan's World, which, you know, as people might recall, is very well known for his toy reviews, has an entire empire around him. He has been Forbes' highest paid YouTube star for 3 consecutive years, earning an estimate of $29.5 million last year.
That seems low too, honestly.
And what does he do? He like reviews toys and opens them. And so what does this mean?
Yeah, this language, quote, overly commercial content and quote, videos that only focus on product packaging or directly encourage children to spend money, end quote, will be barred as well. that is open to some Supreme Court level of interpretation from the powers that be at YouTube. And I think is necessary for it because there's a wide variety of content that could fit into those buckets depending on how you're interpreting those statements. And it could be incredibly devastating to a ton of YouTube channels. Although this is just on YouTube Kids, like it'd be interesting to see what kind of consumption, I'm guessing a lot now though, happens for kids that are the target age of these programs on YouTube Kids versus YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Do you do YouTube Kids with your kids or just YouTube?
We do YouTube Kids.
I do YouTube. It's not even a conscious choice. I just like have all my playlists for them on YouTube.
Yeah, again, I do YouTube Kids because I care about the health and safety and mental capacities of my children. It's just different parenting styles. It's fine.
No. It's totally. It's like East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, it's totally cool. Potato, potato. But if I were a YouTube channel that programmed for children or was like a family channel or a toy review channel or whatever, I'd be terrified about this.
Yes. I would be very, very nervous. I think Ryan and I think specifically Pocket Watch, which is the company that has blown Ryan up to be this giant empire, is having some very heated discussions with YouTube. And Chris and Brian Williams, who run that company, I promise, are talking to them every single day. And they're being, you know, reassured by YouTube it won't be so bad. And that but YouTube's also like, we don't really know, and da 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 da.
Yeah, to be fair, Ryan hasn't done the toy unboxing stuff for a while. That's how he started his empire, but his adventures now are more kind of like family-based challenges, playing games together.
So then conversely, that's what YouTube is telling these other unboxing channels, like, go look at Ryan and how he's, you know, he's changed his content.
Right. Some of the stuff my kids love, though, are just adults. This sounds weird when you say that loud. Adults playing with kids' toys.
Yeah. Sometimes you see these like 25-minute commercials on YouTube that are like actually episodes of shows that are clearly selling you something. But there's a Peppa Pig where it's like a human man who's playing with like Peppa Pig toys. You just see his hands and he's starting in a British accent and then it ends in not a British accent. And my kids just like love it. They just like watch him playing with the toy.
Yeah. I'll start looking at my kids watching some of that stuff. And then 10 minutes later, I'm still looking at my kid watching some of that stuff, except now watching it with him.
Also, we should mention, because I think we were on our break when this happened, but Instagram announced a few weeks ago a similar kind of restrictions around privacy. So now the platform will give all new users under the age of 16 a private account by default. And they will have the option to go public. Private accounts enable only followers to see their grid posts, stories, and reels, whereas public accounts, of course, are viewable to everyone on Instagram. Again, adding just a layer of friction, which will, you know, make it so it has to be a conscious choice for somebody to change their profile from private to public. So it seems like, obviously, this is sort of a trend.
I really like that because I think there's probably social pressure among high school students and junior high students if they have an Instagram to do something with it. But the fact that it starts off as a default as private now maybe might alleviate some of that social pressure.
Yes and no. I think that, and again, this is having just spent like a couple of weeks with my 17-year-old niece, I think most of their profiles are private. And I think where the social pressure comes in is who you're allowing into that privacy. You know, back in the day when I wasn't like, you know, invited into the LP clique in seventh grade and whatever, I'm not still thinking about it. The version of that today would be like, I'm not allowed to be, you know, see this Instagram that's private between these like few girls and nobody's gonna let me in. So I think there's still a lot of social pressure there.
Lauren, what does LP stand for?
I don't remember.
And you never found out.
Nope. Where are those bitches now? Hey, moving on. Really quickly, Josh, your favorite YouTube Shorts launching a global ad campaign starring BTS, The Weeknd, Camila Cabello, and Doja Cat. This is huge. This is big, Josh. And so YouTube Shorts VP of marketing, Jody Ropert, said in one of our biggest brand marketing campaigns to date, we are leaning into the shorter side of YouTube, quote unquote, to show how easy and fun it is to watch and make YouTube Shorts. And this, of course, is on the heels of their announcement of the fund, $100 million fund, giving anywhere from $100 to $10,000 payments to creators.
Lauren, as you'll remember, one of the reasons TikTok came to be the global superpower that it is now as the most downloaded app in the world as of a week or so ago is because they spent a boatload, shipping container loads of money on marketing and advertising. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. like hundreds of millions of dollars to really get it up into the charts and get it on everybody's phones. Mm-hmm. YouTube just starting out with this with Shorts. So they have some big names attached to it. You can go to their videos. You can create a short from their video. That's pretty cool. What I think a slight advantage here is for YouTube is that people are going to YouTube to actually consume and watch music. And then they can create little short videos from the music that they discover, watch, and consume on YouTube. Whereas mm-hmm. they can do that on TikTok too, but they're not like discovering the songs on TikTok from the artist. You don't go to the Weeknd's channel and find his new song, and that's how you learn about the new Weeknd jam. You can do that on YouTube. People do that on YouTube all the time. It's huge for the music industry and one of the biggest revenue generators for all the music labels. And so people are going there for their music consumption. Now they can create shorts from that music. But also, in addition to those big names, I've seen ads for YouTube shorts now on Reddit, on Twitter. And occasionally, if you go to google.com, it'll say below, hey, yo, try out our new YouTube shorts. It's pretty cool.
Have you done a YouTube short yet, Josh?
No, but tinkering with it.
Tinkering.
Soon, Lauren, soon.
Get the scissors out, cut them off, get the jorts on.
There's a better joke in there somewhere.
There's a better joke. It's, that was really bad. We'll get there. Hey, everyone, we have got a good one for you. Get ready for the Brix O'Brien experience.
More specifically, Brian's a creator with Spring who found a way to create innovative, interactive products that his fans both adore and engage with like crazy. Here's the scoop.
My name is Brian Saviano, and I am a family-friendly content creator that goes by Brix O'Brien all across the internet. I first started making videos all the way back in 2008 in the seventh grade because I was so enthralled with the internet and everything that YouTube and Twitch had to offer, and that really sparked an interest for me to do family-friendly playthrough videos, do podcasting, hosting, the whole nine yards for a content creator like myself. And you know, as I started building up my following, I was looking at my options for if I wanted to do merchandise, and I saw that Spring had a lot to offer for t-shirts, hoodies, pillows, cups, the whole nine yards. Because having the physical merchandise made sense, why not take that into something digital, especially because everything I do is in the digital realm as it is. And it just made sense to do digital products like a coloring book and a crossword puzzle because I use this mascot in all the various games that I play. So why not have that be an interactive aspect to my merchandise so my fans can get that and customize the character the way that they want to? And the response has been great. I've actually had people send in snippets of the coloring book with a customized version of my mascot. And there's been all sorts of awesome submissions. So people really took it and ran with it when they knew that that was a possibility. And because I already had the assets made, it was as simple as uploading it, filling out the listing, and boom, there it is. It's now an official product coexisting with the Brix O'Brien t-shirts, the mugs, the pins, everything else.
Let's give it up for Brian. Not only did he build his one-person empire brick by brick, literally, but he's also selling tons of products, and his fans are having a blast putting his character into all sorts of adventures.
You can do the same. Spring has nearly endless amounts of physical and digital products to choose from, so let your imagination go wild. Plus, it's all free to create. Create with Spring, share on social, earn what you deserve. Head to Spring to get started. That's SPRI.NG. Quickly, uploads, downloads. I have an upload that I'm very excited about. YouTube franchise Spy Ninjas has inked a 3-year book deal with Scholastic. Okay, so Spy Ninjas, if people don't know, it's from Chad Wild Clay. They are a husband and wife team creators that have a huge empire on YouTube. 38 million subscribers, 400 million monthly views across 6 channels. I have believed in these people for such a long time. Fascinating individuals. They're from the Midwest, married, were in LA for a few years, like kind of met all the creators, started their channel. And then they were like, they wanted to sort of, you know, start their life and build a house and continue growing. And they just couldn't do it here. So what did they do? They moved to Vegas and geniusly brought some of the people that they met here. And they bought 2 homes there, one that they live in, one that they shoot in. And Vegas is just like a huge, vast land that's an amazing place to sort of shoot video. And they have just blown up from Vegas. And it's, I am so excited about this. They've been doing a ton of stuff. They also have a toy line that is online at Walmart and Target and Amazon. And I think they're going to go into the brick and mortar locations this year. And I'm so excited for them. And it's great to see the success.
Not only is Vegas a good backdrop for shooting locations, it's a good backdrop with no state taxes for shooting locations.
No state taxes. And also the problem, what people don't understand, is in Los Angeles, you walk around with a camera, you're going to get somebody like that's going to call Film LA on you, and you need to have like a permit. Like, you can't just shoot in LA. Like, you have to have a permit. A permit is money, and you have to put signs up, and it's a whole thing. I did some stuff with full screen, and they still call me sometimes, and they're like yelling at me, and I'm like, no, people don't care as much in other places. They just don't. You probably have to do film permitting legally, but they don't. I mean, not to say that, I don't know what Chad and V are doing. Maybe they are doing it all, whatever, but you can find giant, you know, open spaces and just go do your thing, and you're not bothering anybody and nobody cares. So it's, if you can make it as a YouTuber anywhere else, it's the dream, I guess. And they have done that. Any uploads or downloads for you?
Yeah, real quick shout out to Nick Merckx, who is a gaming streamer. He's part of the FaZe Clan. He's become Under Armour's first content creator ambassador. And as Brendan Gann noted on Twitter, with Nick Merckx, Under Armour is working with one of the most prominent athletes in the fastest growing sport. In the US, there are an estimated 177 million gamers versus 63 million NBA viewers. That's crazy.
That's crazy. I know. I mean, if you look at other celebrities that have deals with Under Armour, you're talking about Steph Curry, Lindsey Vonn, Tom Brady, and now Nick Merckx.
And this reminds me of the deal Liza Koshy did with Beats. So she was a Beats ambassador, did some marketing or promo for Beats back in the day. And the Wall Street Journal profile came out on Liza Koshy. And in there was a little tidbit that said her Beats campaign be out in whatever the KPIs were, whatever the efficacy ratings were.
Right.
The Beats campaigns of every other single celebrity that had a Beats campaign. And I think Under Armour is going to see similar results from this, where despite Under Armour being associated with all those names you just said, Nick Merckx can really kill it for them.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, I think we did it.
Lauren, I think we got it. I'll see you, but as an anonymous avatar with a JPEG profile picture via your crypto address, bidding on some type of NFT with 499 other people.
And I've never looked better.
And if not there, next week on Creator Upload. Today's show was produced by Lauren Schnipper and me, Joshua Cohen. It's also edited by Jason Kang. And the music is by London Bridge. You can check him out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. You should. He's awesome. And make sure you subscribe to Creator Upload on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I personally listen to Google Podcasts. I think it's dope. Check it out if you have an Android phone. While you're there, give us a rating and leave us a comment too. If you want to talk to us, hit us up at info@creatorupload.com. We love getting your emails. If you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. If you love our show, recommend it to everyone on your contact list. Thank you for listening to Creator Upload, and we will be back next week.